This is Pac-12 football.
Jordan Webb, pressure from the back, and down he goes in the arms of Big Will Sutton.
Barkley, oh, he got clobbered as well. This time Anthony Barr will record the sack.
Heisman hopefuls.
Caught! Marquise Lee! Touchdown, SC! 75 yards!
Mariota firing, lofting, and touchdown, the Black Mamba!
Championship caliber teams.
Hand off Taylor, left side, running, first down! Stanford's gonna win the Rose Bowl!
The Conference of Champions brings you the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. Here are your hosts, Mike Yam and Rick Neuheisel.
Staring down week 12 of the college football season. This is now a running theme. It's not just a podcast thing, it's a TV thing as well. What is your deal when right before we're about to start something or come back from break, you give me this look just to see if I'll break and I'll laugh? And it happened on the postgame show on Saturday night, and I asked Curtis Conway to help me out in a highlight so I can compose myself. Curtis gives me a one-word response.
All I did is look at you. I'm in awe of your television expertise, your acumen for delivering just the right thing at just the right time.
D.D. Goodson. Who won't be on the show. We have to get D.D. on the podcast.
We do.
He is becoming a cult hero at the Pac-12 networks.
For those vertically challenged, D.D. Goodson is a hero.
How tall is D.D. Goodson? Is he 5'7"? He's not 5'6".
5'6".
He's not 5'6".
He probably will tell us he's 5'7", but you say you're 5'8", and you're not 5'8". No, you're not.
With the hair, I'm 5'8 3/4".
With the hair. Okay, Fletch.
We had basketball season started up for us on Friday night, and we were talking about heights of guys that were on the floor, and Drew Schiller, who was working with me that night, goes, yeah, he's 5'10 with his shoes on. Thinking to myself, all right, if that's how we're starting to say everyone's heights, then I'm definitely going to be 5'9 moving forward.
I'm going to tell you right now, yeah. I stand next to you almost on a daily basis.
Yeah, which is the highlight of every one of those days.
Well, all I know is I can set my elbow on you like you were at a table, you know, as I'm reading the daily newspaper. So the point is, you're 5'7". 5'7 and a half, I'll give it to you.
But
there's no disgrace in that.
I'll take look, I'm not one of those guys. I swear to God.
Yes,
you are what
you are.
No, you are what you are.
Mike.
And that's what it is.
Mike, do you, when you go to a company softball game, do you wear a uniform? Do you wear baseball pants?
No. I play it before I got here.
You wear cleats?
Hell yeah. Wait, are you kidding me? What is this, amateur hour? Yeah, I'm wearing the cleats.
Do you wear sleeves?
No. I only wear, whatever the issued jersey is, I wear that, and then usually shorts, but definitely the cleats.
Yeah.
Definitely the cleats. You got to wear cleats. Do you think I'm going to get my sneakers dirty?
Did you just call them sneakers?
No, that's my sneakers. I'm not wearing
that
when I go
out
on
the
softball.
That was such an insight into who you are. Our listening audience knows who you are.
It's sneakers. Not like I'm wearing.
I think I'm going to get my sneakers dirty.
Dirty, exactly.
Think,
that's why I wear
long
cleats.
And hard about how I said.
I don't wear the headband. I don't have knee high socks. I don't do that. Although that really would be a sight. What's the Dodgeball, the movie? The dude who wears the knee high socks and the whole. Yeah, that's not me. If we ever get a Pac-12 Networks softball thing, I would do that for an inning just for you to keep you entertained.
You don't have to do anything out of the norm.
Just be.
I will be entertained just by you being you.
As in the infamous words, and you just found out who Spoonie Love was on Crank Yankers, don't change. Few people would understand that reference. And if you do, kudos to you. I mentioned entertainment. Sheer entertainment value alone this week. Week number 12, as I mentioned earlier, 6 games, no buys. Adam Kramer from the Bleacher Report is going to join us a little bit later in the podcast. Got an opportunity to speak with him yesterday. Friday night, though, Washington and UCLA. Tonight on the Pac-12 networks, actually a little earlier time. It's Wednesday at 5 p.m. Pacific. Multiple re-airs.
Multiple.
Keith Price is going to join us on the show. What a date that Price and company have taking on UCLA. You made reference to all season long, how impressed you've been with Miles Jack. For this game in particular, is Miles Jack more important to his team's offense or defense? Not for the rest of the season, just in this game against the Huskies.
Great question. I think I'm going to answer he's going to be more importantly, more important defensively. just because that's where he's going to spend the lion's share of his time. But I certainly anticipate him getting more chances on offense. He was electric in his game against the Wildcats down in Tucson, so you'd be crazy not to keep him rolling.
I haven't had an opportunity to ask you this because we keep running out of time when we're on set. How do you manage his time on the field on both sides? Play special teams?
I don't think you worry about it. I think he's so young and he's so energetic. I mean, you saw him during the course of the game the other night where he's waving to the coaches, more. I don't think he's at a place where either mentally or physically you can wear him down.
You ever see Universal Soldier?
I'm going to go out on a limb and tell you no.
Okay, Jean-Claude Van Damme, this was years ago. I mean, this got to be late 90s, but they try to create the perfect soldier.
Right.
You know, the DNA manipulation, whatever case may be. What you're describing to me is the perfect football player. Guy could play on both sides. Guy who doesn't get tired, apparently. I mean, he is.
Terminator.
Yeah.
Guy you give it to on third and one.
Yeah, or Weapon
X.
Which,
by the way, was the down that they gave it to him when he went 66
yards for the touchdown. You like Washington in this game?
I think Washington has an edge in this game because of Bishop Sankey and what he brings to their offense. I don't think it all has to be on the shoulders of Keith Price, although Keith Price has been terrific since the nightmarish game down in Tempe. And I think this game for these two teams is the seminal game of their season. The winner of this game is going to say this has been a successful season. I think we'll use it as a springboard to finishing strong. The loser of this game is going to be disappointed in how this season ends. That's my take on it from 30,000 feet right today. I just think that this is going to be a decimating loss to the loser.
If UCLA loses, then Arizona State right now is
sitting pretty. Arizona State will know, obviously, because it's a Friday night game. If the Huskies can go down to the Rose Bowl and win the game, they'll have 7 wins. They'll look almost a lock to find a way to get to their 8th, which will take them over their that stumbling block where they've been the last 3 years, which has been at the 7-win mark. It will tell Arizona State that now UCLA with 3 losses, if we can win 1 of our last 2 games, assuming that we can beat Oregon State tonight, if we can win 1 of the last 2, we're in. No one can take it away. And that is that's a huge feather in the cap of Todd Graham and the Sun Devils. They have played terrifically and found a way to do what was necessary in a tough environment in Salt Lake last week.
Arizona State hosting Oregon State, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, Pac-12 Network, Saturday.
Multiple re-airs.
There will be probably a Football in 60 where they re-air that. I just felt like I was a coach on The Voice for a second because I had my hand, because you brought up Arizona State and it was hovering because I knew I was going to promote the game.
You were going to steal?
I wasn't going to steal, but you know when they have like their hand sort of right over the bell?
I don't watch the show.
Yes, you do. You do watch the show. Don't lie.
Pieces of the show. I don't know
why. See the piece where they, here, I'll do it for you. I'm going to put my iPad down. Where they do like this with the hand and they're like teasing the audience. Do I turn my chair for this guy? Do I steal this guy? It's okay. You're not having it.
I'm mesmerized by your enthusiasm for television.
All right, Oregon State, Arizona State. They are coming off of a bye. Mike Riley was a guest on Pac-12 Playbook Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Pacific.
Multiple re-airs.
Damn, that was too easy. He had said that he felt confident. Now, he's not going to say he doesn't feel confident, but they are coming off a bye. He said he had a few guys that are healthier that wouldn't have been able to
play. Yeah, his tight ends. His tight ends, which are the key to that offense. If they can't run the ball, they have to find another way to counterbalance the drop-back game. The drop-back game has bore unbelievable fruit with Mannion to Cooks all season long. But when the pass rush, who every time they line up, know where Mannion's going to throw from. When the pass rush is lined up to get there, you have to have ways to counteract that violent pass rush. And the screen game has been their way to do that. And delays, where tight end looks like he's in protection, then kind of just releases and basically ends up being a drop-off for a Mannion. Those guys were not available. And I think they are back. Hamlet and Rich, Who's the other kid that's back this week? The other tight end.
Hamlet was the one that I know was hurt.
Yeah. No, Hamlet and another kid from Kentwood, Washington. I'll think of it here in a second.
It'll
click in here.
Well, that's the one thing, though, about this Arizona State matchup, because we're talking about the health of some of these guys for the Beavers, and yet Oregon State, these last two games, it's back-to-back losses right now where they haven't looked all that impressive, and yet, as I'm looking it up right now for you, they haven't looked all that impressive, and yet I just feel like from the Arizona State perspective, to get a win like this, and we'll talk to Adam Kramer, and it was something I had asked him, but to not go into Utah and dominate. Maybe some people would have expected that. And you go to Salt Lake City and you win a close game where you outplayed for three quarters.
But that,
do you
that's,
think that's,
a, that's
almost
head,
a good thing?
No, that's head in the sand. If you're not paying attention if you don't realize how tough it is to play in Salt Lake City.
No, but that's my point, though. They got outplayed for three full quarters, and then they still win the game. Now,
they
that's
did
something
what
that
Stanford
I don't think,
couldn't.
Exactly. And that's something. So I think it's a positive from the Arizona State perspective that they showed that they can win a game like that where that mental
there is no question.
That maybe wasn't there a year
you
ago.
You have to know that that's in your DNA, and the only one way to know that it's there is to have it happen. And that's exactly what Todd Graham will take from that game. And I said on our air, on our show on Sunday.
Caleb Smith, the guy?
Caleb Smith, thank you.
Yeah.
I said on our show that Todd Graham has them exactly where he wants them, because now not only do they go home with a win, but he can get their attention over the course of practice that they have to be better for those first 3.5 quarters so they don't put themselves in harm's way as they did in Salt Lake. Why put ourselves in this situation if we can avoid it by just being this much more prepared, doing the little things over the course of the week to make sure that we put our best foot forward from the outset of the kickoff on Saturday?
So how do you feel if you're Todd Graham right now?
I feel great. First of all, my plane actually landed safely. That is a unbelievable scare to awaken. Not only that the plane's plummeting, but you heard a loud noise before the plane starts to take its.
I didn't realize that about.
Yeah, there was
so
a loud
on a recruiting
noise.
Trip. He's going on his way down.
Just
to Texas.
Fallen asleep.
Yeah,
they'd flown home from their Halloween night game in Pullman. So you get home at 4 or 5 in the morning. You get up at 9. You're going to go to Dallas. And you're falling asleep over New Mexico, and bang, you hear a noise, and now you're going from 35 down to 10,000 feet, which is the protocol, because you have to get down where you can breathe, right? And but he wants to get up and ask the pilots. I talked to him, and he said, you know, he had heard that as long as the engines were on, you're okay. And he thought he could hear the engines. But he wasn't sure, so he went up there and wanted the confirmation. And these guys are wearing oxygen masks and are working valiantly to get this thing corrected. And they just asked Coach Graham to take a seat. His offensive coordinator, Mike Norvell, says, I know how that feels. When you, hey, we need to score. Well, no kidding, Coach.
Newsflash, breaking news. Don't you you ever have a situation like that? I mean, you're going to –
Yes, I have, and it's frightening. It's without question. You make a lot of deals from 35,000 to 10,000 as to what you'll do differently in your life if this plane can level out.
I told you this when we got back from media day, and our plane did like a quick pull up as it was approaching the land, and I barely could handle that at that point. McIntyre was across from me and was laughing hysterically at me because I think my face just sort of dropped for a second because you're thinking, hey, it's no big deal.
Oh, this was when you were on that private plane with all
this
the,
my first
with
and
the
only
mucky
time.
Mucks.
Yeah, my yeah. first and only yeah. time. Mike Leach is sitting there just asking. No, it's not getting into that. But the point is that the plane's about to land. It's about to hit the runway, and you're looking out the window, and everything seems like it's A-OK. And then all of a sudden, your head just goes back. Rich Rodriguez had a glass in front of him that slid right in front of me, and I caught it, but it was –
with
of,
your cat-like reflexes.
Oh, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding
she's
me?
That's
why you wear the uniform.
Way, exactly. With the headband and the whole deal. It was one of those guys. But he's feeling okay, which is the important part about Arizona State, that Coach Graham is going to be on the sidelines. Do you think twice about getting on a plane?
No. Best way to travel. Hey, listen, when it's your time, it's your time.
Boy, is a little carpe diem from you there.
Yeah, carpe diem.
I'm trying to hold on as long as I can. Arizona State, as I mentioned, or Oregon State.
You're not going till you're 6 feet tall. You're going to be waiting for a while, Mikey.
Going to get those inserts that I've seen on those commercials. You put in your shoes, you feel real good. Yeah. Grow the hair out a little bit
hair,
longer.
Well,
that actually might be my best chance.
Actually, I think the hair is on its way. I think you might be able to touch the net with your hair.
No. I just got this cut last week.
Dude.
Next week, it's going to get longer.
Very vertical.
Yeah, it is. It's always going to be vertical.
Why?
But it's not,
why?
Because that's how I like it.
But why? When did you decide that was going to be the look?
I swear to God, I had long hair. When I was in high school, it was very long. But I went to a private Catholic high school, so there was rules about how long you could have your hair. So in the summers, I would just let it just grow, and it was fairly long. I coached a swim team at the time. And
were you like Timmy Chang from the tennis world, like that kind of hairdo?
Michael Chang.
That's
Yeah. Who used to be my favorite.
Timmy Chang was a quarterback at Hawaii.
Hawaii, yes.
Michael Chang. That's exactly right.
Michael Chang, by the way, one of my all-time favorites. I swear to God. I swear to God.
Go figure.
One of my all-time favorites. Favorite athletes of all time. I remember seeing him at the U.S. Anyway. So he... No. But there was actually a great...
So you did pattern your do after him.
No. Chang had the hair part to the side. That was when I was like in elementary school. It was parted to the side. As I got older, the part was in the middle. That was sort of the look back in those days. So it was really long. My mom used to beg me to cut it. She hated the long hair. She said, "You're going to scare the kids." That's what she used to tell me.
You were the kid.
That was the point. So I
this
then,
just in.
Yeah.
I don't feel like scaring the kids was an issue.
That was my idea. And then I got to college. It was still long my freshman year. I lost a bet. I don't remember what the bet was, but I lost a bet with a friend of mine. And the deal was that if I lost, I had to cut my hair short. So I had to go, and I cut it short, and then it's always been short ever since.
And when did you go to the spike?
The vertical has always been the case. It's always gone vertical. I can do the you just learned over the weekend what a faux hawk was. I can sort of do that with my hair without the product.
We apologize for this conversation.
Tangent back to football. Stanford USC is, we've talked about this on a bunch of our shows. I don't have to promote any of them because you know what they are. You actually have gone on record to say that if USC wins this game against
Ed Ogeron is coach of the year.
Yes. Yep. Which you agree or disagree with the assessment that the other coaches would vote for him as coach of the year based off of the
I don't think there's any question. I don't think there's any question that the other coaches would be would be in the same situation that I find myself in, that admiring the job that has been done in terms of resurrecting what we all know is a very talented outfit and getting them to play at their full potential.
No one talks about this, Rick. Everyone always says, I've heard every guy, Ronnie Lott, Curtis Conway, they used to wear the uniform, say, the guys are looser. They're having fun. That's the easy observation that you can make from the outside. Mm-hmm. You know what it's like to coach kids. You know what it's like to have success at the college level. How is he actually doing this?
A couple of ways. Number one, he's going back to the Pete Carroll way of doing things, which is here's our plan, here's what I expect of you, now let's go out and have fun doing it. The kids are at ease, they're having, and I think it's correct that they are looser than they were under Lane. And I don't know if that's because of Lane or because he's changed. I mean, the fact that they couldn't have dessert, it's a little thing, but give a kid some cookies and watch him smile. There's no magic to that. I mean, that's just...
Why wouldn't you? Like, what's the thought process behind not giving...
I don't know. Okay. I don't understand that. I mean, there's certainly guys that you want to maybe cut some pounds to help their play, but those guys would be on that regimen, not everybody. I mean... feeding the troops, that goes back to the great generals in our history. Leave football out of it. You feed the troops, you're going to get better performance. That's just part of the deal. But I tell you what else has happened. In the X's and O's world, he's gotten a solidified defense. His expertise is in the defensive line. They've obviously played well in that. Clancy Pendergast has been given free rein to do whatever he needs to do to get people stopped. Offensively, where I see the biggest difference is they've gone away from these bubble screens that were trying to feature Marquise Lee and only Marquise Lee. They've gotten the ball down the field on first down, not just on third down and long, where everybody's ready for you to throw it down the field. And they've
well, you also told me that they're running more on first.
Well, they're running the football exceptionally well, which allows the offensive line two things. Number one, to pin their ears back and come off the ball. And number two, because they're gaining success of that, they get more confident. And more confidence translates into better pass protection. And also, you're asking to protect on downs where maybe people aren't thinking pass. Yeah, Cody Kessler on first down has been outstanding. In the last 2 weeks, 17 of 21 and 14 of 17. I mean, we're not asking him to throw 35, 40 times as many of the other schools are. You're asking him to mix in some throws, get some first down chunks of yardage, flip the field position, play hard-nosed defense, and cause some turnovers. And that formula has been successful for a lot of years. And it's ironic that they're playing Stanford this week, because Stanford was where this thing started to fall the other way. They were number one in the country when they came to the farm last year to play Stanford.
USC, I think I read it this morning, they're running 70% of the time on first down. That's up from 62% when Lane Kiffin was the head coach, and we know in terms of the play calling and what we've seen.
But the first down passes, Mike, are down the field. They're not
the
two-man routes. They're not sitting there and throwing.
Bag that he does.
Yeah, they're very rarely in second and 10. They're very rarely in second and 10. Their numbers are better. And because of that, their third down numbers have gone up.
Yes. I think it's up now. They're hovering. Last two games around 52% prior to that. I think that right now for the season they're at
56%. Now, this is a different animal they're playing this week in Stanford. But it's bull elk on bull elk. And that's why I think Trojan fans are excited because, you know, they have been out physical. Stanford's beat them 4 years in a row, five out of the last six. And always because they've been more physical. This is a team that I think has taken the field this week wearing USC's uniform that thinks they can play physical football with Stanford. It'll be interesting to watch.
Stanford against Oregon, it was give Tyler Gaffney the ball and just continue to just see him pound. In terms of the physicality.
But there was a comfort factor in doing so because they had the lead. There was a comfort factor, and this is why I go back to not kicking the field goal. On the fourth and goal at the four. And I know that's part of the culture at Oregon. It's who they believe they need to be different, and certainly it has been hugely successful in their resurgence as a football program over the last decade. But my point to you is this. When you're playing the best, and I'm talking about these elite programs in the country, whether it be Auburn or LSU or – and remember, and against Auburn in the national championship game, they went for it on fourth and goal at the one and didn't make it. Okay, you're playing against the – you have to know that they have scholarships too. They're going to stop you. And so the percentages say, get my points. Get my points now, and let's play great on defense. And to me, by allowing Stanford to get a 7-0 lead right there and then Stanford gaining 14-0 lead, it changed. You now had no way to change what Stanford was going to do. Stanford was going to extinguish not only the time on the clock, but they were going to extinguish all the possessions that you needed to get yourself back in this game.
It's a great point because David Shaw said to his offensive line in the fourth quarter, we're not going to pass the football the rest of the way. We're going to run. And that was something that he had relayed to.
13 passes in the entire game.
Yeah. He said that to David Yankee and the rest of that O-line. Yankee, I had asked him about that. Pac-12 football weekly Wednesday nights, at least this week, it's 5 p.m.
Multiple
Pacific.
Years.
And he had said that that's the guys just get geeked up for. He's like, we cannot wait, because he said that we saw Oregon doesn't want to play the run anymore. That's what happened in that fourth quarter.
Well, it was long. I mean, that's 45, you know, hammers on your forehead. I mean, it's just coming downhill all day long. And the amount of formations that Stanford used, I thought was ingenious. The amount of unbalanced formations, and it created different guys doing different jobs in terms of fitting the run. I mean, it's one thing to play the same play all day long, but you're not, because you line up in different places when all of a sudden an extra tight end comes and lines up there. So now you're a gap wider, and now your spill is different than it was when you were a gap tighter. So these are the subtleties that might not get caught by the average viewer, but in terms of the chess match amongst the coaches, certainly give credit to that Stanford staff.
From the physicality standpoint for this game, Stanford and USC, we've talked about the lack of depth from the Trojans as a potential issue. Is that an issue in this game? Is that going to be a problem?
It could be, especially if Stanford can do what they did against Oregon, which is have two 20-play drives. You know, Stanford doesn't wear you out because they are up-tempo. So that's not a concern. It will be huge as the third down conversion percentage. SC has got to win this game. SC's got to keep them 35% or lower, in my estimation.
More on this matchup and more
which
on...
means they have to get him to third and long. They have, which means third and five or more. They do that and force Kevin Hogan, and don't let Kevin Hogan make it with his legs. The most pivotal drive in that game was the end of the first half when DeAnthony Thomas fumbled on the two.
Yep.
They had Kevin Hogan dead to rights. He pulls out of the tackle, makes a first down, down on their inside their own 20, 7 minutes and change on the clock. They never got the ball back. Hogan made another first down on third down around midfield with his legs.
That's the one that I thought of because he broke through right through the middle, man.
You cannot let Hogan make those plays with his legs. If you do, it's demoralizing. It's an emotional down third down.
Yeah.
And it's demoralizing if you allow him to do that with his legs. Everybody did their job. They covered. But you got to stay in your lanes, and you got to know, I'm not letting this guy do it. And certainly SC has the athletes to get that accomplished.
More on Stanford and their chances this week against USC, but we take a look back. Adam Kramer joined us yesterday here on the Pac-12 Network's football podcast. First thing I asked him was if that Thursday night game between Stanford and Oregon lived up to the hype in his mind.
In a different way, I'd say absolutely. It was not how I expected it to go. I thought Oregon would sort of add a new chapter to this series and differentiate from the previous year, but that was not to be. Stanford just dominating the line of scrimmage, the amazing push the offensive line got to me was the story of this game. And then they did make things interesting at the end, obviously, with the onside kicks, with the blocked field goal. I mean, it turned out to be a game despite the fact that it felt like anything but. And give Stanford credit. I mean, Oregon is a ridiculously fast and talented team, but right now just seems to have the Ducks' number.
From an Oregon perspective, Adam, do they have to change the mindset and the philosophy? Because I think most of the experts would have said, hey, Oregon's going to win this game on the road at Stanford. They're going to be able to sort of get those demons from a year ago out of their minds and pick up a victory. That obviously didn't happen, but I would make an argument that if Oregon now went and played Alabama, that this was a foreshadowing type game. It's almost a good thing that they sort of I don't want to say it's a good thing that they lost, but at the same time, now they have an idea of what it's going to take to beat a physical team that they potentially could have matched up with in a national championship game.
Well, and this is a great question. I think here's the problem. They do so many things so well that you really don't want to change much. I mean, everything is great. I mean, this program is rolling. Mark Helfrich looks great. You look offensively what they've done. Defensively, this group has gotten so much better. But when it comes to those big physical offensive lines, and I think, is this come down to recruiting more size up front? I mean, you know, specializing in getting in some big bodies. They were clearly, you know, undersized and overmatched. And you're right, when you play a team like Stanford or Alabama, that's going to show. And not only does it show, but it really dictates the entire game. It gets you out of your entire rhythm. So if I'm Oregon, I really don't think you have to change much around. You've got this machine going. It is absolutely rolling. But when it comes to recruiting, when it comes to maybe game planning specifics for games like this, yeah, you probably look at where you went wrong and make some adjustments.
Adam Kramer from the Bleacher Report. You can also follow him on Twitter, @KegsandEggs. Oregon playing for national championship right now, or even Stanford playing for national championship. Both of these teams would need a lot of help to get into that game. How likely or unlikely is that in your mind?
It's unlikely, but it's not unreasonable. And if you're a team like Oregon who drops to 6 in the BCS, that's good news. I mean, even in a week where nothing was good news. You had Marcus Mariota, the health of his knee a concern. He's going to play. You have Stanford, obviously, taking care of business, but you drop to 6. Stanford plays USC, and all of a sudden that's a game. You've got Alabama with Auburn in the SEC championship. You've got Ohio State with potentially with a game against Michigan State, who looks pretty good. So college football works in very weird ways, and the unexpected often arrives, just as Oregon last year, as Kansas State. I think the problem is when you look at a team like Baylor, whose schedule sets up pretty well, a team like Florida State, whose schedule sets up very well, it's never good to need help. help can come, and again, the unexpected often, you know, does come in this sport, but I don't think you count them out just yet. I still think both of these teams are involved, but we need to see some losses, and these are very, very good teams in front of them.
What about from the Stanford perspective? I know they obviously need help, much like an Oregon team, but the Cardinal right now, they are the highest one-loss team, which I think is well-deserved at sitting at number 4 in the BCS standings. But Ohio State, you look at their strength of schedule, nowhere near Stanford's. Stanford's got one of the better strength of schedules in the country. Are they more deserving? Let's say it's a Florida State team that goes and loses, and Ohio State continues to win out. Would we potentially see the Buckeyes still play for a national title over a team like Stanford?
I think so. I think if you're Ohio State, you need to be rooting for Michigan State. And again, they've got some tough games coming up. They've got Minnesota. They've got Nebraska. I mean, games that they can lose. You need Michigan State to be on that top 10 line, because you look at the difference in percentage points between Ohio State and Stanford. It's really close, probably too close for comfort for Buckeyes fans. So I think that's a very interesting story to follow. Ohio State's schedule does not get much better. Stanford still has some meaningful games against meaningful opponents, which will help. Isn't it somewhat fitting in the last year of the BCS that we could have the scenario that we've talked about, yeah, a one-loss team that has a really difficult schedule against a lot of quality competition, winning most of those games, maybe with one loss, and the controversy against, you know, an undefeated team with a much lesser schedule. I mean, it is shaping up to be that if both teams can get there. And if Michigan State somehow loses before that Ohio State game, again, I think things get really, really interesting.
Adam, you mentioned Stanford with some meaningful games. It's going to be one of the better ones of the weekend. They face a USC team that might have been the story of the Pac-12 conference these last few weeks if Stanford wasn't the team that beat Oregon, because I think the Cardinal right now is that team in the Pac-12. But USC is right there. They're playing good football. If let's say USC goes and wins, Coach Neuheisel has made reference to this on a bunch of our shows, and I'm sure he's going to talk about it at some point during this podcast, that if USC wins and they beat Stanford, that Coach O might be the coach of the year in the Pac-12. And if that happens, how do you go and not hire him as your permanent head coach, considering what he's been able to do with the same guys that Lane Kiffin had earlier this season, and they struggled?
I think, you know, I wrote about this after last weekend, that all of a sudden he's made a coaching decision much more complicated than they thought it would be. You know, go to a mid-tier bowl game, just sort of improve the morale, and we'll see you later. That's not the case anymore. If they beat Stanford all of a sudden, that's really not the case. You look at the sideline in a game, just a normal game that USC's playing, and it's unbelievable the transformation that he's had. You look at the energy. You look at the quality of play offensively and defensively. I think USC has a great chance to beat Stanford. They catch them at the absolute perfect time with the possibility of a letdown. And the other thing that's working for USC, one, they're sort of playing with house money at this point, and that's dangerous. And they're not intimidated. We talked about Oregon's brand of football. USC plays a similar brand. They are very tough up front on both sides of the ball, and I think that they can go pound for pound in a game like this. So, no question, huge game for a variety of reasons, and if you're looking closely at that USC coaching search, then you have to tune in here.
If I'm not mistaken, Stanford's beaten USC now 4 consecutive times. Is that going to be the case? Are they going to make it 5?
I actually think USC wins this game.
Wow.
I really do.
You and Rick both like USC.
Oh, boy. Kiss of death there.
I was going to say, that's not a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's a terrifying thing. Again, I feel like this mentality, this is sort of emotionally, USC, you can just see how loose they are. And Stanford put so much into that Oregon game, and deservingly so. I mean, that's a huge game. It's a game we've been talking about all year. I think the way that they're running the ball, I think defensively this team can do what Oregon couldn't, which is stop Stanford backs at the line of scrimmage. I think they've got a great shot.
All right, if they beat Stanford, then they go on the road and they face Colorado. No disrespect to the Buffs, but right now they've been overmatched this season. They're looking at potentially their first conference win this weekend here on the Pac-12 networks against Cal. I think let's just give them the win there, at least in that game. So we're saying Stanford, they beat them, they beat Colorado, and then they end the season against UCLA. You agree? They have UCLA in that final week, and they've beaten Stanford and Colorado. They're going to take that game too?
I think it's a great chance. I mean, and I can't believe we're having this conversation now after what we saw earlier this year about the whole Arizona State fiasco, but it's legitimate. And how much fun would that UCLA game be, by the way, yeah, if there was that much on the line? I mean, it's always a fun game because of the rivalry. And the energy from both coaches in that game would just be fantastic. So it's insane that we're talking about USC with a real chance to win out against really, you know, two really good teams. But I think they have a chance to do it. I just watched this team play, and there's something that's clicking. And offensively, they're worlds better than they were earlier this year. They continue to move the ball through the air and obviously get the impact on special teams that they've had. This team can be really, really dangerous.
All right, Pac-12 South race is still up for grabs. Arizona essentially out of it. It's a three-team race. You got Arizona State still at the top, UCLA, and USC still in the thick of things. Based off of the fact that Arizona State's already got that win against the Trojans, they got a tough date with Oregon State, by the way, who are coming off of a bye. Who in your mind right now is your pick to win the South?
I think Arizona State. You know, it wasn't pretty against Utah by any means, but that's a win that Arizona State has not had in recent years. That's a game that they get behind early and they don't come back and win. Offensively, this team, it's just so much different at home. I think they go home. I think Oregon State, despite the fact that they had a really nice stretch of games, this is not just a great match altogether. Arizona State, you know, home games this season averaging more than 50 points a game. I think they put up big numbers again. I think they sort of build on what could have been a disastrous week last week, changes that. I really like them this week, and I like them to win that division.
Adam, you know this. Everyone wants to win in blowout fashion in Arizona State. They didn't obviously do that against Utah. Is it weird? Is this a weird thing for me to say? I'm almost maybe more impressed with a win like that than I would have been if they blew the doors off the Utes.
No, it's not at all, because you learn about teams in games like that. You really do. And while beating teams to a pulp is nice, and in terms of that BCS era, you get those style points. There's something to be said about the way they went about that game. To be honest, I thought that game was over. I thought that game, start of the second half, you say, nope, there's no chance. Not with the insanely fantastic home field advantage that Utah has developed, but that's not the case. I agree with you. I think you learn about character. You learn the coaching staff, players. I mean, there's something to be said about winning games like that you're all in, you know, all but out, and all of a sudden it changes in an instant.
Adam, before we let you get going, you picked USC over Stanford. Is there going to be more drama in that game, or more drama Sunday night when you're watching Homeland?
I'll tell you what. Homeland now is heating up. I think USC and Stanford just going to sort of – it's going to be a, you know, game one up front. I think Homeland's got some more fireworks,
ooh,
and that's me picking the upset. But I think you're going to see more – just seeing the scenes coming up, too. I think we've got some interesting scenarios developing. That show is really getting good. I love me some college football, and I probably would watch college football over anything. But I'm telling you, I feel like big things are coming for Homeland.
You, Carrie, right now, do you like her? I always usually throw this out at Coach Neuheisel. You like her better on the lithium or off the lithium?
She's so calm now.
I know.
That
it's bothering
I feel like
me.
That bender, the bender's coming. I mean, the bender is coming. And so I've kind of enjoyed not dealing with that and focusing in on the other characters. But when she's sort of managing everything perfectly, like a little bit, you know, a little bit deranged, a little bit on, a little bit off, I think that's when she's at her best. I think that's probably where we're heading.
How freaky is it to see like 30 EPT sticks in a bathroom that are all positive? Like the result was going to change after the 10th one.
Thankfully, I have no experience with that. as far as I know, that's a little bit weird. Now, the question is, the father, are we assuming?
Think it's a question? It's got to be Brody. Who's it going to be? It's not going to be the guy from the liquor store, is it?
What about Quinn? I'm telling you.
You think they already threw down like that? See, I think Quinn.
I've been pitching this idea around. I'm not getting much love from friends who think I'm crazy, but there's something going on there between those two. I wouldn't.
They get together. They do get together. Coach Neuheisel, we do this one thing at the end of the show. It's your one big prediction. He gives me one on homeland, one on college football. A couple weeks ago, he said that Quinn and Carrie would get together. See, I'm buying that storyline. I'm just saying that the pregnancy thing, that's got to be Brody's kid.
But you look at the way the show has set it up, too. Like, they've thrown a few curveballs this year. They're in the curveball throwing mood with the whole setup and having her, you know, committed. I'm just saying, Brody looks so, it looks too easy to be true. I wouldn't be shocked if Quinn is somehow involved. Look, but I could be wrong. I just get that vibe.
Adam, you can't keep throwing curveballs. Sometimes just fastball. Bring the heat. And that's a heater in my mind. Adam Kramer, lead college football writer for the Bleacher Report. Good enough to stop by with us here. You could follow him on Twitter, at Kegs and Eggs. Adam, really appreciate the time and the insight on not only college football, but breaking down a little homeland with us.
Very important matters, both of them equally. No, thanks for having me on, man.
Good to talk a little football and some homelands with Adam Kramer. Does everyone watches this show? Everyone is.
It's a fabulous show.
How are you feeling after this past week, episode 7?
Is it already episode 7?
Episode 7. They played this wonderful, creepy song at the end of the episode where Saul goes to his wife, and you know how this this is how it ends. He goes into the bedroom and he puts his arm around his wife, who obviously was with doing whatever she was doing. Yes, with the guy from wherever she was prior to this. And they play, it's like, I don't know. I looked it up to try to find it. It was like a jazz kind of song. I found a rendition. It was Miles Davis, but that's not the version that was on the show. Whoever's doing the score on the show is doing a great job. The creepiness and the whole deal. But time for one or two big predictions here. You got a prediction for Homeland for me? Or a prediction on The Voice? Are you caught up?
No, I'm not caught up. I told you I don't watch the show. Although I enjoy the show when I.
So you passively watch. Is that the best way to describe it?
If my son doesn't have homework, that show comes on. He puts it on.
Has Joe been happy with the selections?
You told me that on Saturday that the young girl that kind of has
Jackie Lee from Christina's team.
No. The kind of more ethereal, if that's a word. Caroline, that's
Caroline,
it.
For the
Caroline,
Jersey girl.
That she's still around.
Yeah, Caroline actually advanced, and she's in the
top
10 now.
Just keep me posted on how
she... You thought you liked the dude
I like the guitar playing
Austin
guy,
and
Cole. The bearded guitar guys.
Austin and Cole both through. Cole's great. Austin, a little surprised he made it through. You know, they're doing this thing now called the instant save.
Is that where their hands hover over the top of the bell?
One of those deals?
Yeah,
no.
Yeah.
They go to Twitter.
Like
warming
mittens?
So it was down to 12. They select 9 with the fan vote, and then on the 10th one, they go to Twitter, and you have to say and you have to hashtag number
sign. I can't
take
it anymore. Let's get some social media involved.
It is.
Yeah, do that.
Here's what bothered me about this whole deal. It's East Coast bias. If you watch it on the West Coast, I lived on the East Coast my whole life. I am now a target of this East Coast bias that we're seeing. You watch the show on the West Coast, you can't even take part in it. It's already decided. It's all the people on the East Coast that are making the decision.
Thank you. Now you
it's
feel
just like,
our pain.
It's unbelievable.
You feel our pain.
Football
now you know
is the
why,
same thing. This prime time thing, this Pac-12 prime time thing.
Pac-12 is late night TV. We got to
find it.
We got to find a way to get these people to wake up.
By the way,
smell the coffee.
Great job. Have we done a show since the? No. This is your first show since you went on Dan Patrick to do Born in the SEC.
Fantastic.
Can you just give everyone a glimpse of how that came about?
Oh, how it came about?
Because you gave me a heads up you were going to do it. You wrote it.
I do.
And it should be noted
that
you wrote
a radio program for Sirius.
Yes.
And we get lots of SEC fans to call the show. And they.
A lot of guys in trucks.
Yeah.
I used to work at Sirius, and it was always Jim in the truck.
Lots
so and so
folks,
in the truck. Yeah.
A lot of folks who have their favorite team, whether it be Alabama or Auburn or Florida or Georgia, that they just grew up that way. And it just dawned on me, you can't blame them. That's just where they're from. They're not going to listen to that there may be another way to play football. Dan Patrick always asked me to bring my guitar on the program. Yeah. I said, all right, we'll do it. So Born in the SEC, sung to the tune of Born in the USA by the boss.
How quickly can you write a song like that?
Once you get an idea, Writes itself. I mean,
multiple versions of it?
I had a lot of scratch-offs because I didn't want to make anybody really mad. You know, different things like you could add it in about illegal recruiting or things of that nature.
We're just going to avoid
you just drop that. Yeah. Who needs
just
that aggravation?
Well, it was entertaining even without that stuff. It was, I don't know how many views or whatever, but I know.
Makes no difference. It was just for fun.
Well, a lot of people enjoyed it. Two big predictions. Let's get back to
I predict that you're going to be 5'9 by next week.
That's
that
easy. The hair grows fast. It grows fast everywhere except in the areas where I'm losing hair now. The power alleys.
If we just cut off the top tuft of your hair and fasten it to an old bow, it would be...
Oh, it's a deadly weapon.
Yeah, it would be a deadly weapon.
When I go through security at the airport, the guy...
Dances with wolves could take people out with your hair.
You know, they gotta do the pat down once you get through security. Dude's like, yo, you got to take that the hair product out. You could break a door down with that bad boy. All right. So
did you just say bad boy again? I've got to break that habit.
I do it for you. So 5'9 next week. That'll happen.
Okay. My prediction for the college football world in this conference. Now, we spend all our time talking about the games that are most significant on the national scene.
Yeah.
I'm going to predict that Cal's
getting a road win.
Cal beats Colorado this weekend.
2:30, Pac-12 networks.
And that's not an indictment of Mike McIntyre and his staff. I just don't think Cal has enough athletes in their back end to stop all the great-looking wide receivers that Cal has that have made plays each and every week but just haven't been able to make enough plays to stay up because Cal's defense has struggled. And I think that... against Colorado, Cal's defense can hang in there. It's going to be a very close game, but I think Cal has enough, and Jared Goff has enough to get a win and stop the Schneid.
Who's the best player on the field in that game?
Paul Richardson. Yeah. Paul Richardson's one of the best players in this conference.
Just curious.
He's obscured because he doesn't have a lot around him.
P. Rich obviously had a pretty good game. Last week, weren't even sure if he was going to be able to play on the Pac-12 networks, but he did, 77 yards and a touchdown.
Three catches.
In that game, yeah.
And then walked in after maybe one series in the second half. So he was fighting through an ankle. But you got to imagine he'll be okay this week.
You have a prediction on Homeland or The Voice. Christina Aguilera, by the way. Wow.
This is getting to be something. Why don't you just ask her out?
I don't know.
I mean, you're a television star, for gosh sakes.
I don't think it works like that. You know what she said? She did her confessional on the show.
Yeah.
She had four dogs at home. That's too many dogs. That's too much for me.
You wear hair product. We've all got our peccadillos. All right.
So does she, by the way. I was just about to make a joke about makeup, and then I realized that I'm wearing makeup right now.
You're taller than her.
Yeah, that's true. Probably.
You're taller than her.
Yeah.
Why don't you just say, hey, Christina, I really enjoy what you do, and I'd like to buy you a cup of coffee.
Can I tell you a funny story about Christina Aguilera, how the stars might have aligned for us? Years ago, I have a cousin who got married in Los Angeles, Malibu. So we're heading down to Malibu for the wedding.
Look at you. Swish-swanking it in the boo.
No. So Jimmy Kimmel was his best man. And Adam Carolla was there, and I was just asking, like, "Hey, who couldn't come?" Sarah Silverman and Kimmel were dating at the time; they were both at the wedding. And I had said to him, "I was like, oh, who was
you know
invited?
Jimmy Kimmel went to Arizona State."
Yes, yeah.
He's a Pac-12er.
He had said to me, "Oh, Christina Aguilera was invited to the wedding," which you know this was years ago, and I was like, "Oh, that would have been pretty cool." Now thinking back, what could have been on the beach in Malibu if Christina Aguilera had gone to that wedding? What could have been?
Why can it not still be?
I don't know. Maybe I should call my cousin and find out. I mean,
this is your own issue. This is something deep-seated in you.
I have a lot of issues, as you're well aware of.
Yes.
So maybe. All right. So you have
an issue. Here's a tissue.
The one big prediction. Then you're gonna. Is it a Homeland prediction or a Voice prediction?
Well, I can't make a Voice prediction. I'll make one. Caroline to the finish line.
All the way.
Yeah. Oof. She's got the most.
I don't know if she's better than Tessanne.
She's got the most, I want to watch that kid sing.
There is a lot of that.
I'm telling you.
Okay.
She has the most, I want to watch that kid sing. And that's what they're looking for.
So you would go with her as your winner of the show.
That's
feel like it's CeeLo's team, though. That usually isn't the recipe for success. Although I did say to you that if you have to be on the show, you want to be on CeeLo's team, the way that the system is. Because if you're really good, you're guaranteed a spot. Because Adam's team is stacked. He had to let go of a few people that were really good. Christina's team this year was really good.
I love the amount of time and attention you spend on this.
You're now getting me excited for the possibility of maybe reaching out to you at Xtina on Twitter and seeing.
Just say, listen, I've been challenged to ask you for a cup of coffee.
Cat was pretty good.
I'll bring my four cats. Maybe they can meet your four dogs.
I'll tell you what. Will Champlin, the dark horse in my mind, to win this thing.
Okay.
I don't think he does. Tessanne, I think, is still the best in the show. All right, and nothing
at home. What is Brody going to do? What's
He's
big
been
news?
MIA.
I know. Big news are we going to get? Because something has to come roaring back with him.
This week, I think, is the
Some
week.
Big
I don't remember
thing
the
is going to happen with him. And by the way, we didn't see much in the world
his baby?
Of his daughter, who's kind of gone
so over that.
I know everyone. But she's here. Coming back in. She's going to be involved with him somehow, some way. There's a prediction.
Your bold prediction. From Rick Neuheisel. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach.
He's mad. Neuheisel. He's going to have to go break down. There'll be tears. There'll be that, you know, father-daughter thing, and all of a sudden she'll be hooked.
We're all about it. Dad, you can't lie to me again. At Mike_Yam, at Coach Neuheisel. You can always follow the Pac-12
Mike
networks.
_Yam.
At Pac-12 networks.
Overserved. That's you.
And for everything that's happening around the conference, you can always download us. That is true, too. On the website at pac-12.com or on iTunes as well. Mackenzie and Candace always holding it
Diva
down for us.
Las Vegas.
Talk to you next week.
This is the Pac-12 Network's football podcast.